Good morning to our listeners. I hope you've all had a fantastic couple of weeks. I am your host, Hava, alongside my lovely cousin, Meryl. And what a treat we have for you on this episode of Geekly Recap.
Coming up, we will be discussing episode 6 and 7 of Apple TV's The Morning Show. We'll be delving straight into Bradley and Alex's life and those around them.
Firstly, we will briefly give you an insight into our week, as always, and then look at the characters' lives, how they've been impacted by those around them, or how they've impacted others.
This is a special bumper episode, a little different to before, but just as informative.
And fun, we hope. So grab your wine, water, tea or coffee and join us. Hit that subscribe button first.
And follow us on our socials at Geekly Recap Pod for all the latest info.
This is Geekly Recap.
Hob, I've missed you!
Oh my God, I missed you too!
It's been how many days?
Oh my God, I don't know. I've lost count. It's been so long.
It feels like ages.
Oh my God, today is exactly a week.
Exactly.
So if people don't know, I don't know why you wouldn't know, but if people don't know, Meryl and I spent Halloween weekend together the first time in like 2 years, three years?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
I remember John Williams. It was around that time.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, you mean no John Williams.
Yeah, no John Williams.
He was a no-show.
But he was ill, so...
Yeah. You know. For anyone who's going, there was an evening of John Williams. He was meant to be at the Royal... Oh, what the hell is it called?
Royal Albert Hall.
It's been so long.
The London Orchestra.
Yeah, so he was meant to be there, but he flew over and then got ill. And so he couldn't be there. I mean, he is an old man now. So he was in hospital. So it was more like a tribute to him. It was still good, but you know.
Oh, yeah. We were like orchestrating. I was trying to think of the words.
Conducting.
That's what we were doing.
Yeah.
Dude, as soon as like Superman came on, your arm just went flailing in the air.
I can't not do that. If I watched the movie at home, I'd do it.
I'm the same. But then I just wanted to be marching to the Empire theme. Jesus, I can't even talk.
Imperial March?
Yes. Oh my God. I really can't talk. I should let everyone know that I did nap like 2 hours prior to this.
Oh, poor baby, you're so tired.
I am.
But anyway, our Halloween this time, no John Williams again, but we had a lot of fun. I mean, we laughed a lot.
I know. To the point of ugly laughing and hiding our faces.
Definitely. I mean, I thought I might be hospitalized because I was clutching my chest.
And I've missed that. Like, yeah. I've really, really missed it. So it was so lovely to do.
Definitely. It was so lazy. We just ate loads of crap. Played a video game until dawn. Watched some horror movies. Harbour finally saw Hocus Pocus.
I know. I had never seen Hocus Pocus.
Actually, I think everything was a first time viewing for you.
Yeah.
And was that the standout or was Terrifier the standout?
I mean, Terrifier would only be the standout for that one particular scene where I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even have to ask you what scene you're talking about. Because when I first watched it, I was like, what the hell am I looking at?
I was trying to explain it to a colleague at work and I went, now I kind of know what men feel like. Because usually in films, it impacts men's genitalia a lot more than women's.
Yeah, yeah.
And I use the example of snakes on a plane. But still, I'm just like...
But now there's the question, is what happened in Terrifier worse or childbirth?
Oh, God. I would say this... Well, actually...
You know how someone might metaphorically talk about childbirth? It's probably a bit like what happened in Terrifier. That's how it feels.
Yeah. I'm not going to explicitly say it, but no. If anyone's interested in watching it, go watch it.
Yes. I mean, just if you're of a sensitive nature... Maybe don't. Or look away quite often.
It's, out of like the horror films, I don't tend to watch that many gory horror films because I don't find them scary. But this was up there as probably one of the goriest I've seen in a long time. And I enjoyed it.
Yeah, because this one had like a creep factor as well. So
definitely.
It was gory, but it was creep. Like it was scary purely because the person behind it is so creepy.
And mute.
I mean, if you're scared of clowns anyway, it's creepy. I'm not that scared of clowns. But I guess if they're coming at me with a weapon or like a really creepy face, then I'll be scared.
Or a saw, a hacksaw.
Any sort of weapon or just even that guy. That would probably scare me. The way he was staring at the girl in the restaurant, that would have been enough.
Oh, that smile.
But no, Halloween was great. We had nice fun. And the moment you left, I was like, ah. I didn't really cry, but I was crying inside.
I was crying inside. You were probably crying because you wanted more biscuits as well.
Yeah, I finished those bad boys.
That was another highlight for Meryl.
What were they called? Pfeffernüsse or whatever?
Yeah, Pfeffernüsse.
Which means pepper something?
Pepper nuts.
Ah.
And it is basic. I mean, I didn't study German, so apologies to our German listeners. But they're basically kind of like Lebkuchens, however you pronounce those biscuits, the Christmassy spiced German biscuits. And they were iced. And then I made some vanilla ones. I can't even pronounce that. I can barely pronounce this, so I'm not even going to attempt that one. And they were like crescent moon ones, piped, because I was still following the Great British Bake Off Challenge.
So good, though. I mean, especially the Pfeffernüsse. Oh, my God.
I made my own spice mix. I mean, this wasn't one that I made up. I found the recipe online. But, you know, I made it myself and I changed the, I amended it. Like, I changed some of the quantities and stuff because I was like, no, but I like this more.
It was amazing.
I'm so happy. But that was basically our week. Well, I know we've had kind of 2 weeks off, but we've been busy. We've been doing stuff.
I don't even remember what I've been doing. All I've been doing is looking forward to Halloween, basically. Well, not Halloween. Harvard.
Oh, and
Halloween.
Yeah, likewise. Oh my God, that's what we should change it to.
Well, shall we get on with the thing?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what everyone's here for.
Sorry, guys. It you know, we thought about doing them separately, but with everything and the fact that we were going to spend the weekend and we didn't really want to cut into our weekend with recording it as well. You know, we just wanted to enjoy ourselves and eat, lie down and not do anything and stroke the cat, you know?
Yeah. Oh, when she fell asleep in my arms.
I know.
On my last night, it's like she knew.
She was like, please don't go.
And the thing was, I mean, I said we were going to start, but I was falling asleep.
Yeah.
And I think you saw me doze off. I can't even remember, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I was dozing off. And you said something like, she's coming for you. Or I don't know. I just felt this crushing feeling on my chest and realized she was already on me. I was like, oh my God, she's not even big, but I guess because I was kind of dozed off. Yeah. I was like, what is this pushing against my chest?
But also when she's standing up, because her legs are so skinny, it's like this bony thing pressing on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, ow.
When she's lying down, it's fine, but on her feet, ow.
Oh yeah. I definitely wasn't disrupting her because at that moment she chose me. So I was like, Meryl, if you want her to leave, you're just going to have to move her yourself. I don't want her to hate me.
Yeah. And this came from someone who like a few hours before that was like, oh my God, you just let her walk all over you because she was like, resting on me.
Yeah, but she does that all the time.
She doesn't do that all the time.
Whatever.
You can't say no when they choose you. It's just rude. They'll never come again. They'll remember it. They'll be like, all right, fine, I see how it is.
Oh, please, their mind's like a goldfish.
We will stop, but I just wanted to say, I had to put her flea treatment on her yesterday, right?
Oh, fun.
And normally I put it when she's like a bit more dozed off, but she was taking ages to settle. So when she was laying there, I was like finding the little, you know, area, making it ready for myself. And she didn't do anything. I'm like, oh, that's good, all right. And then I put a bit of it. I didn't even get to finish. And she looked at me like she was betrayed. And since then, she's been like scared and wary of my hands and me. But she still like cuddles up to me when it was nighttime. So I was like, oh, you forget for bedtime.
Oh,
she's like, there's a truce right now. But today, again, she was still a bit like, what's in your hands? Hold on, show me your hands first.
Yeah, I had to do it once when the cat was eating. Just because it was the only time they could bend down so I could put the flea treatment on them. And then they had a look and I was trying to pretend like it was rain. Like we were outside. I was like, you're stupid enough to think it was rain.
But yeah, we'll see when she actually forgets about that. Tune in next week.
Yes.
Anyway, let's talk about the morning show. Previously on the morning show.
Stella was racially abused outside the UBA offices. Yanko saw this, beat him up. This, of course, was filmed.
In season one, Bradley's brother told her he was going to get off the drugs because of her optimism about the world.
Alex warned Bradley about trusting the Maggies and Lauras of the world, and Bradley begged her not to poison her brain about Laura.
Alex obsessed over Maggie's impending book and asked Chip if he talked to her.
Laura told Bradley that soon after Alex found out that she was gay, so did her employer, which led to her being fired.
Maggie confirmed that her book mentions Alex and Mitch's sexual relationship.
Alex told her it's not true, and Maggie said if it's not true, Alex can sue her.
Corey heard the rumour about Bradley and Laura dating.
Earl told Corey the only way to stop the nasty stories about Hannah being published is to find a more salacious story.
Corey asked Bradley if he should do whatever it takes to stop the stories about Hannah. She said yes.
The Vegas debate happened without Alex, who backed out last minute.
Alex got on a private plane headed to...
So episode 6 of The Morning Show is titled A Private Person.
Summary for that one is TMS welcomes a new face, Bradley gets a surprise visit.
This episode was directed by Rachel Morrison. She is a cinematographer and director. She's worked on Cake with Jennifer Aniston, Black Panther, Mudbound, Fruitvale Station, and she's also directed a little bit with Hightown, American Crime, and she's working on a film called Flint Strong.
It was written by Tori Spear, who we've mentioned before, and Stacey Osei-Kufour. I hope I said that right. She's worked on TV shows Run, Hunters, Watchmen.
Woo!
And her first writing credit was on an episode of Pen 15. Or I don't know. I'm guessing that's how you're meant to say that title. But we love that show.
It's so good. And it's coming back.
I know.
December 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
And December 1st for It's Always Sunny.
Yes, I know. I can't wait.
I know. Finally have something to look forward to.
Wait. We have loads of things. We have Dexter. We have other things that I can't remember right off the top of my head.
Okay, but these are more current. And It's Always Sunny has been ages.
Yes, it has. Really has. All right. Season 2, episode 7 is titled La Amara Vita, which translates to The Bitter Life in Italian. The summary is Alex takes a trip to finally find closure.
This episode is directed by Mimi Leder, who has directed the most out of this series and is the executive producer of this show as well.
And it was written by Kerry Ehrin, who is also an executive producer, and Scott Troy, who we've both mentioned before in our past episodes.
Yes. I'd like to say, before we actually get into the episodes, I did enjoy episode 7. I did afterwards read some comments, and I agree with some comments. But we mentioned episode 4, I think it was, that for us was a weak episode and we didn't enjoy. And that was the one that's written... It was Kill the Fatted Calf, so I think that was 4.
Yeah.
And that was written by Scott Troy.
Well, partly written by Scott Troy.
Yes. I think we were maybe a little harsh with what we said, but I think it was... I don't think that was a good episode personally. Whereas this one, I don't think it was a bad episode, and I thought maybe because he co-wrote it with Kerry Ehrin, who's just a little bit more established, it kind of helped balance it out.
Yeah, for sure.
It just felt more cohesive.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she was like the one who developed it for TV anyway, so she's going to be one of the higher ups. So if there's anyone you're going to trust with the script, it should be her.
Exactly. And being directed by Mimi as well, I just felt like it was just a well-rounded episode. Not necessarily character-based, but just it felt put together.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, that was a really important episode, so they're going to have to trust it with like the ones who
the
are
big shots,
really
behind.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, we're not going to be doing a recap like we normally do, so doing it separately, like episode and scene by scene. So what we thought we'd do is we'd talk about characters.
Yes.
Because it was just easier that way.
Yes. So we'll focus on Bradley and we'll focus on Alex separately, respectively. And then we'll have a look at, like we said in the intro, the characters that surround them and how they've impacted each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we should start off with Bradley, seeing as she was in the first of these two eps.
Yes, and it was mostly all about Bradley.
That's what it should have been called, all about Bradley.
So, in this episode, Bradley has come back from Las Vegas. She did the debating, or moderating the debate, and she's congratulated. She did a really great job, and everyone's applauding her. And Mia even announces that Bradley will be moderating the Phoenix debate, which is a huge deal for Bradley, who's been trying to fight for this debate anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a promotion, but it feels like a promotion.
Yeah, she's being heard for once.
Yeah.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks for having a meltdown and letting her do it.
I know. Well, we didn't see it, but poor Daniel. Still not getting a debate.
You know what, though? Daniel's just... I don't know. He's got issues.
Yeah, but I think rightly so.
No, I kind of agree, but I don't think he's handling himself well.
The thing is, it's hard to put ourselves into that position.
Yeah, it's true.
we can put ourselves into that position as women.
I don't know. Maybe it's just his portrayal. It just seems like such a whiny bitch. I can't even... Like, well, I kind of... Yeah. Even though I understand him, I can't help but laugh. It's like when I said he's like Eeyore. It's like, oh, this would happen to me. That's that sort of vibe about him.
Aww.
He's like the Travis song, Why Does It Always Rain On Me?
He really is.
It is.
Why does it always rain on me?
Don't sing anymore. I'll have to pay.
My first note on this episode was, Bradley's in bed with Laura. They're basically like, I don't want to label them in a relationship, but they're basically acting like a couple by now.
Yeah. I feel like there's just a different sort of dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
When Corey does ask Laura to fill in for Alex, who's nowhere to be seen, Bradley's really excited. I mean, she's practically begging her to accept.
Yeah, silently, because, you know, she thinks that Corey doesn't know, but...
She doesn't know that he knows that...
that they know.
And she accepts. Laura accepts.
Begrudgingly accepts. She really doesn't want to come back to the morning, like a morning show.
Yeah, she does look a little bit surprised at how enthusiastic Bradley is about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she accepts. She's a professional. And Bradley then kind of suggests that she brings a few things so that they can head there the next morning. But then Laura kind of goes, well, you might as well leave some stuff here, which does throw Bradley off a little bit. Like, that's almost a bit too committed. Calm down, Bradley. Calm down.
Like, come move in. But also, like, this was Bradley's suggestion. She doesn't want people to know that part of her life.
Yeah.
It's a bit obvious if you're traveling in together.
So Bradley does head back to her apartment to grab some stuff, but her plans are thwarted.
I know, who's back?
Yeah, her brother Hal is back waiting for her. He's come to stay over without inviting himself. Like, I mean, what I mean is he didn't call in advance. I hate that.
I mean, it is her brother, but yeah, again.
Still, you don't know her life.
Well, we only had glimpses into her life and we know that he's troubled.
Yeah, no, I just mean he doesn't know if she's busy. He just turns up. Out of the blue. So Bradley, even though she doesn't tell him that she actually had plans, she does text Laura to tell her she won't be able to stay over.
Hal's played by Joe Tippett. Tippett?
I think it's Sorry.
Tippett. He's been in a few things. He's been in Mayor of Easttown, who someone actually recommended I watch. Apparently it's really good. I've not seen it.
Yeah, I've actually started watching it.
Okay.
It's good so far. I've only watched 3 episodes or 2.
He's appeared in Dirty John. And that was a TV show based off the documentary, if I'm correct.
Possibly. Which season was it? Do you know?
No, I don't get that. Sorry. Okay. Monsters and Men and Boardwalk Empire.
So before Bradley heads to work the next morning, she sees Hal asleep on the couch. And he seemed to be watching an infomercial. Was that an infomercial about knives?
Well, is that what infomercials are called when they're trying to sell you stuff?
Yeah, it's like a long advert. You know, the ones that act like they're not adverts, but they're clearly adverts.
I don't think it was an advert. I think it was, you know, when it's really late at night, it's basically the channel turns into a shopping channel.
Yeah, infomercial.
Oh, well, that's not an advert.
Well, it is. It's just a really long advert with like, you can call this number and order these knives.
But they talk live to you. So it's not an advert, is it?
It's still an advert, but that's why it's called an infomercial.
This is most of the debate now. It's like, no, is it called an advert? That's not even important.
This is the important part. Is it an ATM? Is it a vestibule? So while she thinks he's asleep, she searches his bag for drugs. It turns out he is awake and he
knew.
Yeah, he knew. But I'm guessing he's used to this. I don't think it's the first time this has happened.
Which, you know... You can't blame her and you can't blame him either in this part because he wants that trust.
I suppose.
But you got to earn it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like I said, it's not the first time this has happened. So for the fact that he's turned up out of the blue,
yeah,
which, you know, I guess in the past for Bradley has meant, oh, God, he's in trouble again, isn't he? He's not just here to see me. But at work... Gail, which is Bradley's producer, reminds her that this is her show and Laura is just the guest. And Bradley's like, I know.
Yeah, but do you? Do you?
Does she? But she's clearly excited to have Laura on.
They then kick off the show together. And I love the, I can't think of the word right now, but there is a word for it. It's like a double meaning.
Mm.
When she says, welcome, Laura. It's so nice waking up with you.
All right.
That was her introduction to Laura on the morning show. I was like, oh, America knows now.
Well, America does know in a few hours because Bradley gets a text from her brother with a link to an article leaking. Well, it's kind of like a question, isn't it? They're like, is Bradley and Laura dating?
Yeah, by The Vault, was
it? The Vault, yeah. I wondered who got that reported.
I know, when we saw Corey being a little conniving, didn't we?
Mm, conniving, but in the saddest way possible.
I know, I almost just wanted like the evil smile. Or it turns to camera.
But he's not happy about this. Normally he's all like, you know, puppet master, but this time he actually seemed a little bit like...
I'm like, get over it. Just be like the villain everyone loves, Corey.
Well, I don't think he is a villain. I know you were painting him as one, but he isn't one.
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, he's not a villain in the sense of, like, Fred being a villain.
Well, no one's a good guy in this. Come on.
I don't know. Maybe Chip.
I'm sure he's got some dark crap as well. Let's face
it. Poor Chip. I don't know. I watched this so far. We're 7 episodes in. And I'm like, poor Chip.
No, I do like Chip. But, you know, I think you have to rewatch season 1. He wasn't always the nicest person.
Rena is a good person. She's just pregnant.
You're talking about like a non-important
I'm
person.
I'm really
right
trying
now.
To find a good person.
Yeah,
in this
good
show.
Luck. The dog. The janitor. The dog. Okay, you've won. Bravo.
Which we haven't had in a few episodes. Now.
I
come
know.
On.
Come on, man. Where's your dog? Anyway, Laura does see this article and she tries to comfort Bradley in like the most professional kind of way.
She's been here before.
Yeah, Bradley's in shock, though. I mean, she's a pro in the sense that she goes onto stage and she does it and no one can tell anything by watching her. But everything is blurry, echoey.
She's totally breaking down. It's kind of like when you receive bad news while you're doing something and you don't remember how you do that thing anymore. You just work on autopilot.
Unfortunately, the gallery also saw the article.
Yeah, everyone was getting it at the same time.
And I'm sure at that moment, Bradley even probably had a moment where she felt like everyone knew. Everyone knew at that moment. Not just her. She didn't just get the alert. Everyone is looking at her. She excuses herself. She heads to the dressing room and Laura comes after her.
And she says it's effed up, but it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And Laura then, you know, she kind of has a brief heart-to-heart with her. And she explains she's been here before. But she tells her, like, we need to get back out there. How the hell is Bradley going to finish this show?
She insists that her issue isn't that she was outed. She just says, I'm a private person. Oh, yes. I know that title. And she actually also says that because I think Laura's telling her to go home and like de-stress. And she's like, I can't. My brother's there. I can't talk to him. And she's worried about being judged. And she admits that she's never had a serious relationship before.
She also gets really defensive when they're talking about the differences in their families.
Yeah.
And this, I mean, Laura pretty much said this to her a couple of episodes ago. And, you know, she lost her mind. I say mind because I didn't want to say shh. And she smashed her vase. And she was like, you know, I'm not from a backwards town, blah, blah, blah. But she is. And she says, my family isn't like yours.
Mm-hmm.
And Laura says, I can't remember her quote, but she talks about messed up kids and what they do and messed up adults. And she's like, we get therapy. And, you know, she basically says she got therapy. And this might be something that Bradley needs to get through this, especially being in front of cameras. It's not like you can just hide away from it.
But Bradley does not go home. She stays in her dressing room all night.
Yeah.
And she's looking at the news on her phone and on Twitter. I wrote down some of the tweets, which made me laugh. But they are horrible because it does kind of give you an idea of what she doesn't like.
Yeah.
Which is like people saying, like, I bet Bradley calls Laura daddy. Someone says, new segment, mud wrestling, Bradley, Laura jumping, keep the cameras rolling. The morning show should be renamed Keeping Up with the Lesbians. You know, and you even have, remember that, because Yanko's not in on this thing. I don't know if at this point he was suspended, but he finds out later he is.
I think he was probably put on leave or something.
He's been replaced by this other guy who is actually really horrible. Like, he makes two comments that are completely the kind of thing you don't want someone saying to you once they find out you're gay.
I get that he's the standby guy for Yanko, but I can't believe he's the standby guy.
I know.
That's obviously part of his personality.
Exactly. Now, he was gross because he made two comments. He made one about, because Daniel says, like, he hopes it's not true. And he's like, oh, why? Because you want to be the only gay person here, which is a horrible thing to say.
Yeah.
But then he also, when they get back on stage to, like, do the bye whatever they're doing on the couch, he turns to Laura and he says, like, what does he say? He says something like, you know how you might say, like, how Joey might be like, nice. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's so, like, I mean, it's funny when it's Joey because it's a comedy, but it's not that you don't say that there.
It's not appropriate, especially, like, and not that there's a good time to do it, but that is not.
You're not close enough with these people to think you can get away with making a joke like that. Laura calls her while she's still hiding in the dressing room.
Because she thought she was home.
Yeah, and she invites her over. Bradley's sort of, she can't. And this is when, I think, I don't know if she repeats herself because this is when I wrote it. She basically tells her, like, Bradley, this was traumatic for me too. But Bradley, instead of going, oh, was it, you know, I'm being concerned, she kind of says, but no, this is about me. Like, what was it? What was so traumatic for you? And I think that really offends Laura.
Yeah, and just because she's already outed, let's say, and people know, it doesn't mean it's not going to affect her.
Exactly. From what we know as well, Laura already was like, this was a big deal for her to come back to morning television.
Yeah. And on her first day.
Exactly. So it's not like, I mean, why? Just because she's more composed than you are, Bradley, it doesn't mean she's not feeling things. So, yeah, when she gets offended, she tells her she no longer wants her to come over. And then she says, you can't keep using the excuse of effed up kid. You're an adult now. She's like, change the circumstance and get therapy. Which, in a way, it was a harsh thing to hear, but I think
it's what she needed to hear.
I think Bradley needs that because so many people tiptoe around her because of how, you know, she gets all thingy about herself, like hissy fits.
And I hate that. Like, I hate that in the real world. I hate it when people have to walk on eggshells around people because they're so scared of how they might think.
Exactly. Like, oh no, they're going to overreact. No, she doesn't care. She's very no-nonsense. Laura is very no-nonsense.
Yeah. You're like, you can't keep treating adults like kids.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's why Bradley heads home. Hal is awake. And he says that their mum has been calling all day, freaking out.
Completely
because she's
freaking
embarrassed.
Out.
And it's a small town. So basically everything, like we said, Laura had said before is true. And he kind of makes it about him, which really annoyed me. This is not the right time for this to happen. Like, she wanted that to happen. And he's like, oh, I've been using it again, so you're just going to affect me.
It goes to show that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, because I think they're both alike. Just because one's a drug addict. They're both very alike.
I suppose, but this kind of gives you a big insight into, even though we kind of saw a little bit of in season one because she really didn't want to go home and we did kind of see their dynamics at home.
Yeah.
You get more of an insight into the kind of person Bradley's always had to be, like the responsible one, even though she has slipped, which, you know, I mean, she got pregnant when she was a teenager and all of this. So we know she's had her slip ups. We know she's had her little things that she's had to escape from, which is probably why she doesn't go home. But she's also had to be the one that took care of her mum and her brother.
Yeah, at a very young age.
Exactly. And I think it's quite horrible that they're embarrassed by her truth.
This is exactly it. We said small town.
Yeah.
And then her mum's like worried about what her friends might say.
I know.
And he says something like, if you had told us before or this had come out before, she would have had enough time to deal with it.
Yeah.
And I kind of get that. But again, like, you can't give her a timeline on when she needs to come out. This isn't even what she released. It's what other people have released.
It's not like she went, hey, guys, I'm going to come out and, you know, announce it. This is clearly something that's happened without her consent. Yeah.
But there are parts that I really sympathize with Hal as well.
He says he's using it again.
He admitted, yeah.
Yeah, and he said he can't stay home because their mum has gotten worse.
Which is probably what's leading him to use. And he's trying to find that stability in Bradley, even though Bradley's not stable herself. But I'm guessing he's the younger brother anyway.
I think so. I got that vibe. Yeah.
So he really does look up to her. And this is, he refuses rehab, which, you know, we later see in this scene. When she offers it, she's like, I can actually pay for it now, though.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think he just wants that guidance from her.
Which is nice that he looks up to her, but she's been doing that his entire life and she's clearly not in the position right now.
She's got enough of her own stuff.
You know, so she's kind of having to deal with this. She can't be looking after him right now. She wants someone to look after her for once.
Yeah. And then Hal accuses her of saying it's all about you. And he's like, this anger is aimed at you, which I just thought it was literally a reflection of each other.
Yeah, definitely. But Corey saves the day, sort of, temporarily, by knocking on the door.
I know. And then, like, slowly creeping away.
So Bradley confides in Corey. I didn't write everything she says, but she says to him, "My roots are really rotten." And she says that with Laura, she sees the woman she aspires to be, but she also sees who she really is when she's with her brother.
I mean, we see the vulnerable side to Bradley with her conversation with Corey, and she says that she's scared of losing someone she cares about, which she is referring to Laura. And she feels like she has clarity now.
Yeah, she kind of says that maybe it's a good thing that this happened.
Yeah. I still don't know how I felt about that whole scenario with her and Corey. I feel like she had to get there and she had to get to this realization, but she's jumped how many steps forward that I don't know. It just felt like it was to move her story forward. And just by her being outed, let's say, and by Corey saying, "You do your own thing," and Hal having a go at her and Laura having a go at her, she's like, "Yeah, you know what? This is me." It's almost like she hasn't processed anything and it's just been a matter of hours, a whole day. And she's like, well, it felt like she was not only accepting her, whether she's, you know, a lesbian or bi.
Well, look, while I kind of agree with you, I also think it's very easy to say it. I don't even know, like, it doesn't mean that anything's changed. It doesn't mean that suddenly she's going to be this enlightened person in the next episode. I mean, it's Bradley.
Well, we'll see.
But I think she was just thinking out loud at that moment. And I don't think when she said that things are clear or whatever, that everything's sorted. I think that kind of at least answered part of the question by her thinking out loud to Corey. And to me, the fact that she goes back into her room and just tells her brother that he's leaving the next day, I don't think that suddenly means, oh, she's fine. I think at least as far as what she needed to do, as far as her family goes, I think that was the thing that she was clear about, you know, what she had to prioritize right now. And she wants to prioritize her relationship, or at least who she is, rather than dealing with her family.
Definitely she needs to prioritize who she is before anything, before even Laura. But I kind of got that vibe and I briefly said it to you.
Yeah.
The way this show's been going and the way some of the stuff has been written, it doesn't surprise me if they suddenly just make it out that she's in love with Laura, because I also kind of got that vibe from her speech where it wasn't just clarity about herself, but she's in love with this person and she cares for her so deeply she can't lose her.
See, I didn't get it that way, but I guess we'll find
Maybe
out.
Maybe I'm a pessimistic, you know? Maybe I'm just negative about it. But, you know, at the same time, I'm also that person where I feel like you can have a strong connection with someone in a short amount of time. Like, I've definitely felt that. But, you know, you've only known her for a few weeks. Remember, time has stood still on the morning show.
Yeah. I mean, again, I don't personally think it's a love sort of thing. I just think at that point she was more thinking about where she is in her life and what she wants to focus on right now. It doesn't necessarily mean that Laura, but obviously she does care about her. But I think it was more, does she listen to her own gut or whatever, or deal with her family? And I think at that moment she was like, I've got to think about myself.
I think it was more that, but I definitely got both vibes out of it.
Well, I guess we'll see.
Well, you know, we'll see. Spoiler alert, episode 10, they get married.
Oh God, is that going to be the end? So with Corey's situation, he doesn't appear too much in this episode. And most of the time he's got a sad face on. But Earl pitches Laura and Bradley's secret relationship to the Vault. The Vault does hesitate, saying it's not as big a story.
Well, because there's no proof.
Exactly.
They need the proof.
They need photographic evidence. And Corey kind of nods, like, I'll handle it. Mm-hmm. He decides, when he finds out that Alex is away and they don't know when she's coming back, he's like, we need someone big and stunty. He says stunty, that's not my English,
yeah,
to fill in. And someone you wouldn't expect. So when Chip suggests Laura, he's immediately into it.
And Chip suggests this as a stab in the back to Alex.
Yeah, sure. I mean, he does say it'll be motivation for her to come back faster, which is true.
but we find out why he's already a bit angry with her anyway.
Yeah.
But then we find out why he really is angry
later
on.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, it did make me laugh how enthusiastic Corey was for this suggestion, though.
Because it's like, my plan is falling into place. Yeah, I just assumed it'd be easier for them to stumble or photograph if Laura and Bradley are working together.
that it could also be a case where he's like, well, when this is big news, people will tune in because Bradley and Laura are hosting. They'll be watching for signs of it, right?
Yes, yes, yeah. Exactly.
So, yeah, I wrote Corey spends most of this episode watching Bradley and Laura and looking sad. You know, when they're doing the American Heart Month and Bradley's listening to Laura's heart using a stethoscope.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks so sad. Someone broke his heart right then. Oh, my God. He's like a little puppy.
I still think he's in love with Bradley. If not in love, he's definitely got strong feelings for
her. Yeah. I definitely think, I don't know about love, but definitely strong feelings. He definitely has a crush on her anyway. Mm-hmm.
He is crushing so hard.
He's got a puppy crush. What's it called? Puppy love. And they called it puppy love. Anyway. And that night, just before Corey does go down, and I don't know what, not don't down in that way, guys. He wishes.
Corey goes down.
He goes down to see Bradley. He is drinking alone in his hotel room and watching Laura presenting a TV show.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether he went downstairs with the idea that he might tell her that was his doing. I don't know what he was thinking. Maybe he just wanted to see if she was okay. But, God, I'm so used to seeing Corey smiling like a lunatic. This was a bit, the only bit you got him smiling
guilty.
Like a lunatic was when he was getting really excited about Laura joining, but the rest of it, he's just been so low. Even Stella asked him if he was okay.
Yeah, I think he just feels guilty because he knows what he's doing is not right.
Yeah.
And I think he's still carrying guilt for Hannah.
Yeah, definitely.
Which technically wasn't even his doing.
Yeah. But I guess now he feels like he wants to do something about it.
Yeah, he's got some responsibility.
Yeah. Daniel is interviewing Peter Bullard, who is like a TV presenter or something.
He used to be.
And he's advertising his new show for the UBA Plus subscription. And he uses this interview live on TV to corner Peter.
It's so awkward.
About a negative comment he had made about Daniel in the past. And I wrote, Daniel holds a grudge, boy.
Well, it's on the back of Peter saying that his new show, Exact Change, is a long-form interview of people making positive changes in the world, including him. He implies, obviously he's done some stuff, which is what leads Daniel to saying, oh, do you remember the time where you said that I was mincing on the show?
But it's just like the way he went into it. You're like, this is the whole reason he wanted to interview this guy.
Yeah. And Corey's so not happy with this.
No, he gets a call from Peter Bullard.
Yes.
Who also called Stella, but apparently, I guess, even Peter Bullard didn't think Stella had enough power, so called the CEO and complained, which I'm sure pissed off Stella, but, hey, it happened.
If I'm relating this to my life.
Mm-hmm.
My situation with, I'm going to name them if anyone hears this, British Airways. I'm formally writing a complaint to the CEO because it's the only way to tackle it.
Oh, okay.
So I guess that's what Peter did.
All right, Peter Bullard. Yeah. I think Mia tries to stand up for Daniel.
She's really not doing a good job with producing her anchors.
But yeah, she says Peter is always full of S.
Yeah.
And Corey makes a very good point in that even if he is, he brings the network money, so he's allowed to be full of BS or BS or just S. I can't remember. But Peter Bullard is played by, he's like a really well-known comedian, played by Dave Foley. He's best known for a Canadian TV sketch show called The Kids in the Hall, but he's been in movies The Wrong Guy, Blast from the Past, and he was the voice of Flick in Pixar's Bug's Life. He's also been in TV shows The Middle, Dr. Ken, Hot in Cleveland, Will and Grace, and he even had a small recurring role in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia as Principal McIntyre.
Oh, such a great backlog of things. And I love Bug's Life. I haven't seen it in ages.
I know, me neither. It was really good, though.
Yeah. But yeah, Stella's like, you definitely see the power imbalance between Stella and Corey.
Mm-hmm.
And when Stella's like, I've got a hold of this, I'll sort it. Corey's just like, no, you know what? You seem to be doing your job right.
Yeah, the thing is, I guess maybe like you we were saying before, her age does play into how they see her. Because even Sybil kind of doesn't seem to just trust that Stella can handle anything.
No. She tells her in this episode, she needs to take responsibility. Corey hasn't listened to Sybil. So this is she's almost giving her advice. She's saying to her, I mean, whether it's going to bite her later, I don't know. But she says, you know, Bradley is still here and not fired after she requested she be fired. And she's like, you and Corey are a package deal, but you can still choose your loyalty.
Exactly. She calls them, I just wanted to put this because I did research. She calls them Frick and Frack, and Stella doesn't get the reference.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard Frick and Frack before, but I never really looked into it. So for anyone who doesn't know, Frick and Frack were a Swiss comedic ice skating duo from like the 1930s. And they appeared in some films and they became world famous. And now their names are slang referring to people so closely associated, they're practically indistinguishable. However, that's us.
That is us. We're Frick and Frack.
Which one are you? I want to be Frack.
That worked out well.
Yay. Part of the reason why Sybil gives Stella this advice is because of the Yanko situation from the episode before.
Yeah.
Stella is aware of this footage. She's watching it. We see her watch it. And Sybil does tell her not to let her personal involvement cloud her judgment when it comes to Yanko.
That really annoys me as well.
Yeah, definitely. So Stella does kind of take her advice. She does thank Yanko for what he did. He thinks that's why he was called in.
Yeah. It was just as a thank you.
Yeah, and he's kind of like, oh, I know what it's like being the weird Cuban kid or whatever it is.
And she's like, I'm still the weird Korean kid.
Yeah, and just when he gets up to leave, she's like, oh, no, I'm still going to suspend you, though.
The thing is, she has to, and he needs to accept that. But, you know, at the same time, I still feel sorry for Yanko in this situation.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, he's done a lot of stuff that, you know, he's not really thought about properly. But that, I mean, the guy did kind of provoke him. All right, he went and told him to stop, but he didn't just go in and start beating him up. He only did it because the guy provoked him. I mean, he had a black eye, for God's sake. So clearly it wasn't just him beating up this guy. But that was outrageous, outrageous.
But we don't know how long he's been suspended for. So I don't know how many are we going to see him. We probably are going to see him appear, but like I said, time stands still. So I don't know. I feel like this show is just basically going to lead up to lockdown and end there. I'm sorry. I think it's quite poor writing. And after I really loved season one, I just felt like they could have done so much more. Because what they kind of done with the 2020 stories is gone, this is what we need to put in. This is what we need to put in. This is what we need to put in. And it's just felt fake almost.
You can almost see where it was slotted in.
Yeah.
But I guess when they had all of season two written up, it was really hard to fit a lockdown around it. So maybe that's why. But yeah, I feel like maybe because we know, but I feel like when I'm watching it, I can easily see where they've slotted that in. Like just like make a gap in the page there. We're going to put a little bit about coronavirus.
I just think other TV shows have either rewritten their story or incorporated the whole, not just COVID, but the whole of 2020 much better into their storylines than this has done.
Yeah, definitely. But we haven't talked about Chip. I did notice, well, I think everyone would notice that when Bradley, because Bradley thanks, when she gets applauded for a great job moderating, she does thank Chip because he was the guy that last minute basically prepped her when Alex disappeared.
Oh, Chip was her producer.
Yeah, and hardly anyone applauds. Like, it's a much less enthusiastic applause for him. I think that's so rude.
I really don't understand the hatred towards Chip. I'd be lying if I said I did. I genuinely don't know what he did so wrong. I can't remember. What did he do that was so wrong?
All I can think is that he was aware of stuff. He was a higher up. And he basically probably did hide some things too. And maybe there's a bit of distrust now. Because there's a lot more women working there now than there was.
Yeah. I just don't know how guilty he is at the whole thing.
I don't know. I guess the book will tell us. I want to read this book too. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, they should release it.
They should. So when Isabella says that, because everyone's asking about Alex, Isabella says that she saw her. So Chip says he also saw her.
I know. And you're like, did you? And Isabella knows. She knows he's lying.
Yeah, he kind of keeps giving excuses. He says that, you know, her back is in pain. The doctor said she's lucky.
True.
She doesn't need surgery. So, yeah, all they've got is that Alex will be back soon. That's all they can say.
And remember, she's only been back for what? One episode? Two episodes?
I think they said she's been back like a week or something.
Yeah,
or
and
something
she's
like
gone.
That. Yeah. So, yeah, they're having a real problem with this, especially Stella. And we do actually see Laura and Chip actually have a conversation in this episode. And you get the idea that they actually have a really nice relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm sure they've got a past as well. You know, he's produced Alex for a while, so he's worked with Laura.
Yeah. She calls him Chuck, not yeah. Chip.
But what is his full name again? Charlie. Charles? Is Chip short for Charlie? Oh, yeah. So, yeah, it must be Charles.
Yeah.
I don't know whether Chuck is another nickname.
I think it's probably another nickname. Like, I'm probably more aware of Chuck as a nickname for Charles than Chip. I've never heard Chip.
I think Chip's very American. That's why.
Yeah, probably. And Laura does ask about Alex out of concern. And yeah. she is aware that Maggie had something happen with her in Vegas. But she does say that she doesn't know what it is. Maggie's not the kind of person to say it. But she would write a book about it. I think Chip says something like that.
Yeah, Chip's like really digging. He wants to know what Laura knows. But yeah. Laura doesn't. Well, as far as we know, she doesn't know anything.
I don't think Laura knows.
But how close is she with Maggie? Would be interesting.
But I don't know. I just feel like maybe Maggie didn't say anything.
I don't think Maggie's the type to say anything from what we've seen so yeah, far. Yeah. Whatever she's going to say is going to be in the book.
Yeah, exactly. She wants Laura to buy the book too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Chip kind of makes an excuse and says Alex was mixing meds, so she was probably not really aware of what she was saying.
Yeah, he says she doesn't even remember what she was doing that day.
Yeah, so I like that he's still trying to cover for her. Like, he's still trying to be as loyal as he can, which I think is quite big of him.
He doesn't want to burn his bridges.
Yeah. And after Laura leaves, he calls Alex's landline. But the next evening, after he doesn't hear anything, and everyone's still like, you know, find out where she is, because Amir finds out that he doesn't know.
She loses her mind.
Yeah. Yeah, she really does lose her mind.
The thing is, she's battling, like, her own thing. So when she finds out that Chip's lost any, like, connection with his anchor,
yeah.
that's putting her show now in jeopardy. It's, yeah, it completely hits the fan.
So, yeah, Chip heads to Alex's place, and that's when he sees that only Isabella is there.
Yeah.
And Isabella admits that she doesn't even know where she is. And they have, like, a really weird argument. Didn't you find this weird?
I can't remember what happened now. I don't know whether I wrote it.
Because he says stuff like he needs to know where she is. And she's like, yeah. Oh, she doesn't need you or whatever. And he says something like she does. And she calls him you people, which means mediocre white men.
White men. Yeah, I was so confused about this because Isabella doesn't actually know Chip yeah. very well. She's new.
I'm not sure if she's new, actually. I'm not even sure if we saw her last season, but I wasn't. She's a very small part, so I don't even think I was paying attention.
But this is my problem. What exactly has Chip done? I feel like he's just getting attacked because he's a white man, and, you know, that's just poisonous in itself.
Well, you know what it is? It's the whole trendy thing now, isn't it? Like, I mean, I don't mean it in a thingy way, but, like, there is a lot of an attack for just being white and privileged
yeah.
now. It seems to be the trendy thing but to tell people.
But when it's uncalled for, it yeah. just angers me. It angers me on both
oh,
ends.
Oh, yeah. No, it annoyed me too. But I thought he handled it well, though, because he leaves and he goes, well, you're white. You know, he's like, well, you're white too, so I don't know what you're going on about.
Obviously, we can fight for gender equality.
Yeah.
But if you're bringing, you know, your ethnicity into it, we all know white women will still end up getting more jobs or, you know, favoured more than ethnic exactly. minority females. So she's still in that category of being privileged in
yeah,
a certain
and you know,
way.
I think that Isabella doesn't really know anything that is going on in Alex's life, whereas Chip knows that there's issues going on. So when he said that she does need him, like he can look after her or whatever, he's not saying it as a white man who thinks she's a damsel in distress. He's saying it because he knows that Alex is in the middle of a meltdown.
He's not saying it professionally. He's saying it personally.
Exactly.
She needs someone on a personal level
so
to
yeah,
get work.
Isabella really annoyed me there. I was like, oh, shut up. Shut up, you silly woman.
Luckily, that was the last we saw of her.
She'll be back, though. She'll be back, probably.
Just continue watering Alex's plants. No one cares.
Yeah, and where's Alex's dog?
I know. Where did she leave the dog?
She clearly didn't take it. Maybe she gave it to her daughter. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, that phone call that she makes in the next episode, I would have asked about the dog.
I know. That would have been my only question. I wouldn't care about the book. I'd be like, oh, yeah, there's a book as well.
Ignore it. How's the dog?
as we know from season one, Mia also had a sexual relationship with Mitch in the past. And so when she sees, like it was on the news or whatever it is, that Audra will be interviewing Maggie about her upcoming book, Mia also looks really nervous. And we find out that she's trying to be in touch with someone who works at Vanity Fair.
Called Ken. Yeah. Just in case it comes up later.
Yeah, just in case we meet Ken. And she says that she needs to know what's in Maggie's book because she wants to know she's safe. And Ken actually emails her the article that Vanity Fair will be publishing. And the article's title is Mitch Kessler Allegedly Targeted Black Women.
This is also kind of out of the blue because I actually believe Mitch when he says, you don't believe that, do you? I don't think he specifically targeted black women. He just had a problem and he targeted all women. But they're spinning the story, right?
I don't know. I mean, we only know of... Actually, I'm trying to think if we knew of other people. But we, I mean, as far as I'm aware, I only know of two people. So, yeah, I don't know. I actually don't know.
I just feel like it's a way of the news or any publication company just trying to spin something else to get a story.
Well, possibly, but it's from an excerpt from her book. So maybe
who's Maggie spoken to?
Exactly. So, I mean, either it's true or there just happen to be a lot more black women working there in subordinate roles?
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll find out because I don't want this just to be a story. I'm like, you've got to have some content.
Exactly. So, yeah, so that kind of sets off Mia, who then has a meltdown when she finds out she doesn't know where Alex is.
Yeah. Episode 7 of The Morning Show, as mentioned, is titled La Mara Vita. It's basically all Alex and Mitch and some Paola. And it starts off with Alex. Where did she head to, Meryl? She headed to Lake Como.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a wonderful place. Why not?
I know, but in the middle of a pandemic,
this
a lockdown,
is how much she wanted to go there. But not for the holiday, obviously.
Yeah. So obviously she's got on a private jet, flown to Italy, you know, couldn't find Mitch's number. And it's all because she wants a statement out of Mitch to say that they didn't sleep together. Like, we did say her paranoia was through the roof, but this is something. This is flying to another country.
I know. I think there's a part of her that probably thought this back pain is only going to go if I go and talk to him.
The thing is, yeah, I think she really needed to see him face to face. And even just for some character development, like, we keep saying these, you know, they worked together for 15 years, but they were best friends.
Yeah, exactly.
And people forget that. She's lost. It's like losing your twin or losing your arm. So even though she may be so angry with Mitch and she doesn't actually know what has necessarily happened, it's going to be that part of her that feels like she's lost something and there's still going to be love there. I mean, we might question that, but we won't really know unless we were ever in that position.
Like you said, she wants him to say, write a statement that they didn't sleep together. And he says that he's done lying. And she says, you're too good to lie when it F's up my life. And she kind of basically says really horrible things like that nobody will respect her if they think she slept with him. He says, I've done a lot of things that I regret. I've made some really bad decisions, things I'm not proud about. But even though I feel remorse, I'm the person who did those things. So I know I'm no angel. And here I thought you were doing this to keep Lizzie from knowing or Jason from looking foolish. But it was the mere fact that having consensual sex with me was so vile that it will end your life. And you know what? He's right.
He's right.
Also,
he's so right.
Also, though, I mean, because obviously we've been talking and speculating this whole time and we believed that there had been some abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And this episode basically told us that was not the case.
It was an affair.
It was an affair. But it wasn't, it was consensual and she does never deny that it was consensual.
No, but I still don't understand when we go back and she says she doesn't remember how she got there. I still want an answer to that.
Well,
was she drunk? Or?
This episode makes me think, based on the conversation, because he does ask her at some point, were you really going to say I raped you? I think she was being a bitch. I mean, this episode made her look, even though she's not been very attractive up until now,
yeah.
This episode, I found her even less attractive as a person. Because like what he just said, like, I thought this was about your daughter or your, you know, people that you care about respecting you, but really it's just about your reputation.
You. So, you know, we had it's all about Bradley, now it's all about Alex. it's going to sound bad, unfortunately, but it's, I did say before, I think the person who's been written the best has been Mitch.
Yeah.
Over the course of the two seasons.
Yeah, definitely.
And I really actually feel for Mitch in this episode.
Oh, me too. I mean, he admits, this is the thing, this is why I love that quote. They make him likable. But then this is why I like the quote. Like, he says, like, I've done bad things, but I'm not going to pretend that that wasn't me that did them. I know I'm not a good person. I know I've been bad. But this is the thing. Alex never takes responsibility for anything she's done.
No. No one takes responsibility for their actions.
But he
has. And this is it. He's not just saying he's sorry and he wants to change. He genuinely is trying to do those things from what we're seeing. And maybe being ostracized was the way to go.
Yeah, I mean, he does say a few times in this episode that that was the one good thing, I guess, about being cancelled, as he put it. Which, you know, that, you know, it does kind of make you look at what's actually real in your life. You know, the people that are there for you at a time like this as well.
And Alex is just, she just can't handle it. She just wants that statement and she just wants to leave. Basically, she's like, I got to catch a flight back. Just like, you just got here.
Which he can't give her either because, you know, we find out he has no publicist anymore.
No, he needs an attorney.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how she thought, well, maybe because she's famous, but how she thought she was going to get in and out of Italy, who's in lockdown. She does say she can't forgive him.
He does also say in that scene that you were saying about that she won't forgive him. He says about the, were you going to say that I actually raped you?
Yeah, because he says, I don't want you to think I'm evil.
But he also says what they did, he doesn't think even qualifies as sex.
Yeah, which is interesting. So, but this is in reference to Chili in particular?
Yeah, I think so.
Which is what was up for discussion.
That doesn't explain what she said later, though.
Exactly.
Which isn't a spoiler. She says she got pregnant. Well, she thought she was pregnant.
Well, she thought she was pregnant.
Maybe she didn't know how you have babies back then.
No, but it might mean that it happened on more than one occasion.
Maybe.
So
maybe.
We're focusing on Chili, but Chili could have been that they were having fun, but they didn't actually have sex.
Maybe, but she says it was after Chili that she thought she was pregnant.
Then I don't know what she was putting inside her.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why he said it that way unless he forgot about that actual time. I don't know. I really don't.
I don't know. Something probably could have happened after Chili and maybe that's what could have made her pregnant.
Only because she says about Chili, that's why.
I know. We're kind of trying to fill it in, but there is some holes there.
That's what she said. Wait, I don't know if that works. But the thing is, when I thought that he abused her, I felt she had more reason to be as angry as she was. And I'm not saying that
this
she doesn't.
This episode changes that.
But she acts like everything he did to her. And you're like, I get that they were close and she feels upset, but it's not like she wasn't quite aware of what he was doing.
Yeah, it sounds like she was mostly aware of what he was doing.
Exactly.
Maybe that's one particular time. Like, I don't want to cancel her out and say, oh no, she's wrong. Because whatever did happen in Chile, if she genuinely doesn't remember it, then okay, there was that one time where something happened. Or she says there was two times, wasn't there? But we don't know what the second was.
Yeah, I can't remember.
When she says there was a couple of times, she doesn't remember how she got into his bed.
Yeah, but I still feel like she was lying now.
This episode, it makes you question it. And this is scary because it's stuff that happens in real life all the time.
If you remember the previously on this show, they show you that scene in full rather than what they did before.
Yeah.
So he says, you wouldn't. And she says, try me. It's almost like she was threatening to lie that he also touched her.
Yeah.
Which makes her very ugly.
Which is awful. It's awful, considering, like we said, they were best friends and there's still a relationship there.
Exactly.
She's really trying to leave now and she can't. And she's stopped by police. And she's like, I can't even remember what he said. No, it wasn't mademoiselle. They're not in France.
Signora?
Signora, yeah. It's like, we're in a lockdown. She's like, oh, you know, I can get out. Like, everything's booked. She can't book on a normal flight out.
Yeah, and he won't leave her until she's made actual arrangements in front of him.
She basically fell asleep behind the wheel and parked on the side.
Yeah, but it goes to show you, I mean, this is kind of a setup for what happens later because they're very dark, winding roads anyway that are probably dangerous if you're not paying attention. And she, on her meds, I'm guessing it was the medication made her drowsy.
And jet lag and everything exactly. combined.
So, I mean, luckily she was smart enough to pull over and fall asleep. But
she
definitely needs to get out or stay somewhere. And the only number she has, since her phone is dead, is Mitch's number.
And like you said, the police isn't going to let her leave.
Yeah. So with her tail curled between her legs, she has to go back to Mitch's house, even though she left really dramatically.
So she enters Mitch's place. There's already a note on the door, on the gates, that says, come on in.
Yeah.
And we see that Mitch has basically made her breakfast.
I know. He sounds like the perfect man.
I know. It's almost funny because, you know, he lives in a massive nunnery that we discovered. And he's upstairs and he's left a whole breakfast platter and a letter, which is basically the statement. That was quick. He basically did it overnight.
Later, after some stuff happens, and the last thing he says to her is that he will still release a statement. So what was that in the envelope then?
Unless he'll publicly release one and that's just the proof. Like, that's just the written
maybe form. Yeah, maybe.
But he does also write her a letter.
Yeah. But he writes a little note and he does say he's going to stay out of her way.
Again, I know I shouldn't like him, but when she read that, well, when we heard it, I was just like, oh, yeah, no, I genuinely feel sorry for him.
Yeah.
I don't forgive what he's done, obviously. But like we said, he is trying to change. And I like to think that there's always going to be that part of me that still wants to believe something's good in bad people.
Well, yeah, I suppose. And, you know, he's not an evil, like you said.
He didn't go out and kill someone. Yeah, he's not genuinely evil. And he does deserve his comeuppance. I agree with that.
If he's going to be honest in front of anyone, it's going to be Alex, who probably knows him better than anybody else. So that's what made him even more likable, I guess, in this episode, because you're seeing the real him, not someone he's pretending to be.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she does start to cry when she reads that note. And she drops a plate and it turns out Mitch wasn't upstairs out of the way he was hiding.
Yeah.
Because he comes in. I guess he wasn't expecting her to be crying.
It's been referred that she had a meltdown. I don't think she realises she's still in a meltdown.
But yeah, she kind of says, I'm trapped in Italy and I don't know who I am or what I'm supposed to be doing. And then she says, and I just miss you. And she hugs him.
And I believe her as well.
Yeah.
Which is hard. Like, I don't know whether this is exactly right saying it, but I really enjoyed their connection and that particular moment. Because it's that familiarity. And we've said it previously in the past where people who are domestically abused, for example, they tend to sometimes go for the same sort of relationship because that's where they find comfort. And she does genuinely find comfort in Mitch.
Yeah. But also, because I think the real problem that Alex has with Mitch is not that she, I mean, obviously she's upset with him for doing what he did, but she kind of had some kind of inkling about it.
Yeah.
But I think it's that she hates the part of her that does like him. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And she took that out on him.
Yeah.
So now when she's opening up and being honest and saying that she misses him, I think that's like something she would never admit to anybody.
Sorry, just to cut you off, but you said it. He'd only be honest with her. We only get the genuine Alex with him.
Yeah. She knew that if she stayed there long enough, she was probably going to love him again.
Fall back into old habits.
And so she decided to keep him far away and be really insulting. But God, she was really horrible to him.
She was. She was.
But they make up.
They do. They do. And when she does say like she missed him, we then see them being normal and playing Trivial Pursuit.
But before that, he does manage to blag a flight for her. So she's going to go home the next day.
I know, who does he know in Italy that's powerful? Like, you've been ostracized to Italy. How do you have
this
these connections
the
in Italy?
This is the one thing he has. Probably finding one of the other disgraced directors that... hold on, I'll sort it out for you.
Oh, God.
They've got like, you know how Ross and Friends had like a divorced men's club?
Men's group, yeah.
They've got like I don't know what to call it. The abusers men's club.
Yeah. Their little WhatsApp chat.
So, yeah, as Harvard said, they play Trivial Pursuit.
I've honestly forgotten their names, by the way, so you can fill it in. But I wrote, he calls the chipmunks gay.
Oh, Alvin, Simon, Theodore.
That's it. I forgot Simon. I could only think of Alvin and Theodore. I was like, what was the other one called?
Alvin, Simon, Theodore.
So the question was, who?
Sorry.
And his response was gay. It did crack me up, which makes me like him more.
A question comes up about Laura And that,
how old is this pack?
I know. And Alex is like bored the moment that happens. She's like, oh, I'm bored of this now.
At this point, we have seen that Paola left. She felt uncomfortable with Alex being there. And Mitch asks Alice whether they can invite Alice. Mitch asks Alex whether they can invite her back. And she's like, yeah, I don't see any problem. She doesn't look like there's not that much of a problem. Maybe there's a hint of jealousy.
But maybe.
She's like, yeah, no, of course. Like, it's fine. And they do. He texts her. But she doesn't actually show up.
No. And he does also ask Alex if she could help her out making contacts in New York, because she wants to get started on her documentary career or, you know, whatever. And he doesn't have the connections anymore. And she says yes.
Does she mean it?
I think she means it.
I hope she means it.
Yeah, I hope she means it.
So after they finish their Trivial Pursuit, Mitch plays a vinyl, just Stand By Me.
In Italian, though, so whatever Stand By Me is in Italian.
I didn't do the translation.
Me neither.
And they start dancing. I wrote down in my notes that it's comfortable. It feels like old times again. It's almost like they've pressed pause on their lives currently, and they're just enjoying this moment. He also says, I don't want you to like me. I don't want you to hate me in this situation. I think he is battling his own demons, because does he say it later on in this episode? I feel like he does, and I'm not making this up, where he says he ruined the best relationship he ever had, and that was with her.
I think he said that, yeah, a bit earlier when they were outside.
Yeah, and that wasn't even, like, he could have said his wife, for example, yeah, but no, he had a better relationship with Alex.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and this is when Alex tells him that she thought she was pregnant after Chili. She does kind of console him by telling him that it wasn't a bad thing. Like, she did love him as a partner. And she says something like they were two lost souls who found each other or something until they blew everything up.
And it almost feels like she's not admitting her love for him like that. If that, you know, she loves him, but not in that way. But she would have loved to have a child with him.
Yeah, and she said she grieved like she had been pregnant when she found out she wasn't.
It's a sad moment, because obviously he's taken back by it. How do you actually respond to that?
I know. I don't even think he does say anything, does he?
No, he just consoles her by slow dancing.
Yeah. So, yeah, they've got a few more hours until Alex has to go home. And they're both lying on the living room floor, I think.
She's on the couch and then asks if she can lie on the floor.
Yeah, because her back hurts still. So, and as Harvard knows, a hard floor is really good for your back.
It is. Yeah, I've had so many issues, including slip discs. And the best way is to lie on a hard surface, hard flat, knees up, straight spine.
She needed to talk to you. So while they're sitting on the floor, Mitch says that he's bitter sometimes. I can't remember what stirs this conversation, but he says, I can go to some pretty dark places. And he says, I lost everything that I thought gave my life meaning. And he says, it makes you appreciate everything. And once we know kind of where this episode takes him, it kind of is interesting how much he says this stuff. Like, I don't necessarily think from this point he was thinking, I'm going to kill myself, but I feel like he'd had some kind of closure with her presence.
He's basically accepted. He was already in the zone of accepting, but he really has accepted everything. I feel like he had to see Alex just as much as Alex had to see him. Like, this episode was necessary, because otherwise, when were they ever going to see each other? Over Zoom?
Exactly. And it's what happens after this nice kind of moment that they have. Really, I don't know, it really made me sad even before the last scene.
Yeah.
So they've fallen asleep.
Hang on.
What?
They say that they would be legendary burger sellers at McDonald's.
Oh. Oh, I skipped over that stuff.
I was like, oh my God, they even contemplated like going, we would be amazing working at McDonald's.
But yeah, okay, after all that happy stuff about McDonald's.
it made me want a burger.
Was it McDonald's?
Yeah.
Okay.
I specifically wrote McDonald's, so it must have been,
other
right?
Burger joints are available. But yeah, so Mitch gets up and turns on the TV in a different room. And I guess she wakes up too. And they catch, conveniently, they turn on the news as they mention Maggie's book, and with the Vanity Fair article about Mitch targeting black women. this was really sad for me because they had such a nice moment. Like you said, they were kind of frozen in time sort of thing.
Yeah.
And at this point, it was like waking up from their dream because Alex completely changes how she is with him in
this scene. It's almost like she gets snapped back to reality. I hate using that term because yeah. I'm going to start rapping.
I know. I was the same, like, stop it. But he's so outraged. And like you said before, he asks her, do you believe that that's what I was doing? And she says something like, the fact that you didn't mean to do it doesn't make it okay.
So again, that doesn't answer my question.
Yeah. So maybe he did, but maybe not like specifically. I'm sure he did sleep with other women too, but maybe there was a bit more. Maybe he was more attracted to them. It doesn't mean he was targeting them. It just means he was more attracted to black women. Yeah, that's not a crime.
It's exactly without proof. Yeah, like you said, that part is not the crime. So it's quite hard and...
But when you say targeting, it's like he was like a guy hiding in the bushes going, where are the black women? I'm going to go and jump on them. That's not what he was doing.
I don't think that's what he was doing, which is why I don't believe that excerpt.
Yeah, I don't think it was fair to phrase it that way. They're painting him as this predator that, like I said, lurking in bushes. That's not how he did his business.
And I'm interested to see who where is this evidence coming from.
I know, who said it? Because it wasn't Mia, because Mia didn't want that out. So...
Mia wants no one to know, which is why she's so scared that she's going to be named and framed.
Exactly. Maybe this is all a Chip thing. I don't know, because we know he said some stuff. And I remember in season one, there was a moment.
He said it was off the record, but how much of it was off the record?
But it's so weird when people say that. Like, if I was a journalist and someone said off the record, I'd be like, you know, I'm going to flip and write this down.
Yeah.
How can you? What?
I don't know. He pleads with her.
He does. And that was the most heartbreaking bit because he kind of, I feel like he doesn't, up until now, he thought, okay, I know I've done some bad stuff. But now he's like, wait, so I'm even guiltier than I thought. Like, I'm a bigger predator than I thought, you know, like. And he says, I don't have the tools to understand. And he begs Alex to teach him.
Yeah, he just keeps saying, I want to be a better person. Alex, teach me. I want to be better.
And he's crying.
Yeah. Yeah, I found it heartbreaking. Like, their whole moment together or relationship together was heartbreaking enough. But when you, and again, it sounds like I'm forgiving him for what he's done. I'm really not, but... Like I said, this guy genuinely is feeling remorse and wants to make change. You have to give him that.
So she says she can't help him.
Because she only cares about... Well, no, saying she only cares about her career is wrong, but her career comes first.
Maybe it's similar to what happened with Bradley and her brother, you know, because he wants Bradley's help and Bradley's not in the position because she's not healthy.
Yeah.
And maybe this is what Alex is also doing, you know, like she would help him, but she's in no position. She can't even help herself right now.
And she doesn't want to be associated with him. Don't you remember like the whole, when it came out, she freaked out because her career was going to be over because of Mitch.
Yeah.
Like she genuinely has that fear of her career being over, which is funny considering she didn't want to come back to this job anyway, but she really did.
Yeah. Well, you know, it makes me think that the thing that happened with Laura, what Laura suspects, that, you know, she found out she was gay and then she told the network or someone at the network or whatever and she got fired. It makes me think that she didn't. But the reason why she disassociated from Laura was to just not be associated with it.
Yeah.
So the whole thing that Laura's like, oh, she didn't look at me on the street. It was basically what she was doing to Mitch.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just like, nope, I don't see you. I'm not going to be associated with you because you failed. You're a loser. Don't drag me down with you.
Totally.
I'm not a lesbian. Maybe that's what it was.
So who outed Laura?
I don't know. Here, Mitch does seem really angry for a second and then he loses the fight, doesn't he?
Yeah, he kind concedes.
Because I was really like... I was a bit annoyed of Alex for seeming so, not cold, but just she didn't do what you'd think a friend who would comfort you would do.
I just said she's a coward.
Yeah, she totally is a coward. Because he's like, so you come here and you get me to tell the world you're someone you aren't. You're not.
And so you're not canceled. Do the same for me.
Yeah, and he's like, but you won't tell everybody who I actually am. And but then he just asks her for a hug. I thought, is he going to punch her? No, yeah, unfortunately
he just concedes.
Yeah, and then he still says, I will release a statement.
Mm-hmm. And he says, look after Paola.
Yeah. And now we see Paola, who sees the message new, right? Because she'd fallen asleep or something. And Mitch then actually decides, when she says, like, do you want me to still come over? He says, actually, let me come over and, what was it, live in your world
be
or
in
whatever.
Be in your world. Which, again, to be honest, I didn't really see the ending coming. Not now.
No, I didn't see it at this point, no.
But when you're kind of going back, it leads into place. Like, he conceded with Alex. He made amends of what he could have done with Alex. He kind of set up Paola. He kind of gave in to Paola, having said, no, I'm not going to give in, just because he's like, you know what? This is me, and I'm taking a way out. It's not like he killed himself, but he just accepted that this is his
there
way
was no
out.
Fight left in him.
No.
I don't think he went out with the intention, I'm going to off myself. But when
if he survives?
But when that moment happens, you don't see, he doesn't, it's not like Alex earlier where she freaks out when she almost crashes. He actually almost looks like it doesn't bother him.
It's like he's happy he no longer has to face it.
Yeah. It was really sad, though.
We only see what's on the surface, so we don't see, you know, this man could be having a meltdown on the inside as well. We don't know. And, like, he doesn't even have a relationship, really, with his kids. And that was the part of, like, was it in this episode where he's like, I need to leave? Yeah, in the beginning of this episode, he says to Paola, he needs to leave because of lockdown. He needs to spend time with his kids. And that part of the writing in this episode really kind of irritated me, because I went, oh, okay, so you just gave up on them. But it's just more,
I don't think he gave up on them.
No, but it's kind of that thing where in your head you had this and then Alex came and changed everything.
But it literally was like maybe like the one day.
Yeah.
So, also he was still finishing up quarantine. So it wasn't like he could just do that. And then the country went into lockdown anyway. So,
hey, if Alex can get out, he can get out. He could have gone back.
And maybe he still was thinking he would at one time, but...
Yeah, I mean, like we said, he totally just accepted his fate. And it's kind of like whatever happens now happens.
And it was really sad. I watched the thing afterwards because they have like a bit with the main, you know, behind the scenes, whatever. And they did say that they always planned for Steve Carell's character to pass away this season.
The only way his character could get out was to die. There's no point in putting him in jail.
Yeah.
The only way for his character
to have
an out.
Or he redeems himself, basically.
Yeah, the only way for his character to have an out would have been for him to die. They didn't want to get rid of him because it's Steve Carell. Mm. You know, they didn't. But his part could have technically been done much earlier on. It's just, it was heartbreaking the way it went out.
This is an interesting thing that will happen now, because as in real life, when someone passes away, the way you talk about them changes. So it's going to be very interesting to see how everyone responds to this news.
Is Alex going to defend anything?
I think this is going to push her over the edge.
Talk about Bradley needing therapy.
I know.
Alex is in much need of therapy as well.
I'm very curious to see, like, what this information will do. And also now we know.
And the books.
And one of the things that we didn't talk about was that, you know, if you remember in the two episodes ago, Mitch was interviewed by Paola, and in this episode he did ask her to delete it, but she did reveal to him at the end that she actually hadn't deleted it, or there was another copy of it. So she still has that.
He doesn't seem angry about it either. I think maybe he's a bit miffed, but I knew she wouldn't delete it, and I think she will release it on the back of Mitch's death.
But I think she should release it. I think it's important.
And even that might be the final episode if it ends on a cliffhanger into season 3. Because I feel like I read somewhere, I could totally be making this up, but I feel like I read somewhere that they saw this being a 3-season show.
Okay.
So if that is the way, and she does, it might end up just being a cliffhanger into the 3rd season.
Maybe. Also, you know how obviously she has written statement, possibly. I don't even know if she looked at it, so I don't even know if there was anything in that letter. But he hasn't actually released it.
No.
So does that mean that there is not going to be a statement at all?
If it's been signed with an attorney, then that would be proof. If he's just done it and there's no witness, then I don't think that's valid.
I'm assuming that was with no attorney, but I don't know, because that was very quick. And he said it would take time.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know about that.
We kind of briefly said it, but Mitch and Paola do sleep together. I say finally, even though it was like 2 weeks, but it's finally because she's been trying to get in his pants from the beginning. Well done, Paola. You finally did it.
Show me your big effing balls.
I know, which, you know, she is mental, but I think he likes that about her. And at least they laughed about it. I will say that the scene was done in a, I wrote they made love, but only because it was a lot more sensitive.
It
was very sort of like, it was very mutual. It was very slow. It wasn't anything like what we saw him do before. There was, if anything, she was leading it, you know, but yeah, I mean, it was just, I thought it was a nice moment where it actually looked like, this is what consensual looks like, if just in case you weren't sure. And he does know the difference. He does know the difference.
Definitely. I just had a comment, like, about the end, because obviously we've just spoken about Mitch's death, or, you know, upcoming death.
Oh, are you going to mention, go on.
Do you think it's a red herring with the camera cuts between Alex being sleepy again behind the wheel and Mitch? Do you think that is her car driving him off the road, or that's just a total red herring?
I think that's a red herring. I think they made...
what it would do if that was Alex.
Yeah, because I don't... She would have been... It would have shown us that she was aware of that. If anything,
I think it's
just
a red herring, but...
Yeah, I don't... I think they were completely not even on the same... I mean, they might have been on the same road, but very different places in the road.
I was really hoping you were going to say the same path.
But she... Because we see her actually reach civilization... Because they're in like really quiet parts of
Italy. Yeah.
So when she sees civilization, like some lights, she goes, oh, thank God, because she's going to wake up now. So yeah, they were, I don't think they were anywhere near each other. I thought you were going to mention, she mentioned something about a little death, doesn't she?
Because she does.
I can't remember what she
I
says
can't remember
about
what she
it.
Says either.
But little death is a word, I think it's French, isn't it, for orgasm. So I thought it was interesting that that was brought up and said in that way, but I can't remember in what context she said it now.
But it's a sad ending. You know, Mitch hears everything from Corey to Alex to Hannah, you know, Paige, his wife, in that moment where it kind of like your life flashes before your eyes. For him, he just hears everything, if that makes sense.
All of that stuff was always sitting on him, though, especially after that recent thing came about. It's like...
That
just
was
when,
the final nail in the coffin.
Yeah, because like, he's like, I've accepted I'm not a good person, but people just keep burying me in more stuff that I've apparently done. Like, it wasn't enough what he'd already been doing.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, I mean, I know what you mean. Like, we don't want to like him, but we do like him. Mostly just because he actually really feels remorse. And, you know, everyone's done something bad in their lives. It doesn't mean it has to be on the same scale, but we've all at one point or another felt guilty about something we may or may not have done. We all know what it feels like to feel bad about something. And
exactly.
Wish we could take it back so we can easily relate to it, even though it's not on that same scale. I can't even imagine it on the scale that he has it. And that must be such an incredible weight to carry. And at least he takes it on, though, unlike Alex, who's like, no, my back hurts for no reason. No, it's because you're carrying the weight. Didn't you listen to that
the
psychic?
Guilt. I know. Bring her back. But yeah, like, we have recorded this quite late, as people know. So by the time that you're hearing this, the next episode will be out, which is episode 8.
Isn't this spooky? You'll be able to say, no, you're wrong. Oh yeah, how did you get that? You're so right. Like, maybe we're psychic or we're completely rubbish.
But yeah, because, I mean, at the time of this recording, it's Thursday, so it will be out tomorrow. As in, the new episode will be out tomorrow.
Which is when I'll probably be editing this, so I'm not going to see it tomorrow.
No. It is titled Confirmations. I will give people a preview of that in case you listen to this before watching the next episode.
What is it?
I know. And we'll probably repeat this in the next episode. Well, we will definitely. But it does say that TMS races to report an unconfirmed story. So
what
I would assume that's...
What could the story be?
Yeah, I'm just going to assume as Mitch.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, God.
And how did they get the story first?
It's the internet today, man.
Maybe they've got eyes on Mitch.
People find out
or
things
Fred.
Everywhere. Maybe Fred bloody ran him off the road.
Maybe Fred leaks it to them.
Who knows?
As a way of not really getting an in, but getting an in. I don't know.
I don't know. We'll find out. Yeah. Well, you guys will already know, but we'll find out.
We'll find out, yeah. Yeah, because I won't be able to watch it tomorrow.
Shh, spoiler, I'm not watching it yet.
Oh, yeah, I'll end up having to watch it over the weekend.
But we'll try not to be so delayed. We've got three episodes left, so we'll try our best to actually get those out.
I'm sorry.
In better time. And our recap for two great episodes is done. So what happens next? What will happen when the world knows about Mitch's death? What will Alex do?
Will we finally start to understand Bradley now that she's starting to understand herself? Will Corey ever smile, genuinely, ever?
We have a lot of questions, and three episodes left to get some answers. I don't think things will be that simple, but is this going to end with the lockdown?
I can't believe we've only covered January to February so far. But to be fair, season one took place over 3 weeks.
Any thoughts, questions? Find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Geekly Recap Pod, or you can head to our website, geeklyrecap.weebly.com.
If you head to our website, you can also subscribe to our emails, so you're the first to know about new episodes, any special deals, and more.
3 more weeks of The Morning Show, and then we'll see what's next. Any suggestions, let us know.
Could even be a one-off Christmas special, but about what?
Ooh, almost Christmas. So excited.
La 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 la. Have a lovely week, guys. Catch you soon.